Welcome to the Coffee and Code podcast, where we bridge the gap between technology and people through each informative episode. I'm your host, Ashley Coffee, technologist, two-time TEDx speaker, and CEO of Coffee and Consult. On this show, you'll hear exclusive interviews with experts, innovators, creatives, and business owners in the tech space and beyond. Whether you're a novice or a tech enthusiast, my goal is to excite, inform, and empower you to understand how the rapidly evolving world of technology impacts your daily life. Let's dive into today's episode. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Coffee and Code. I'm your host, Ashley Coffee, and I'm joined by a very special guest today. You know them, Nathan Bowser. Oh my gosh, it's been a long time coming. But Nathan is the founder and chief instigator at Awesome Future, an exciting venture that they will talk about. And Nathan is a visionary entrepreneur and marketing leader with a passion for emerging tech and innovation storytelling. As the founder and CEO of Awesome Future, an innovation and media studio dedicated to helping people with big ideas succeed faster by connecting them with their customers and GTM research. Nathan is committed to supporting founders, product leaders, and innovative companies across various sectors. Nathan, you're an amazing person, and I wish everyone could just know the depth and breadth of your knowledge, but I will save the rest of your incredible bio for you to deliver. But without further ado, welcome to the show, Nathan Bowser.
Hey, thank you, Ashley. What a great way to start my week. Thanks for those kind words. Really excited to chat with you today.
Likewise. Thank you for sharing your time, your energy, your knowledge. This is an exciting space. I've been following you for a while. We've been internet friends. We've actually met each other in real life, which is exciting. But what drew me to you is your creativity and your innovation and your early adopter and your inclusive mindset and just how you bring all those things to the table in a very authentic way. So one, thank you for doing the work that you do. And two, just tell us a little bit more about you, Nathan. You were in Portland, Oregon, Pacific Northwest, beautiful place. I'm in Oklahoma, not as gorgeous as Pacific Northwest, but give us a little bit more about your background and pull the thread on the fact that you've been using AR and VR for marketing since 2015.
Yeah. So I'm Nathan C. I do live here in Portland, and the reason is it's an hour away from everything I love. I can like hop on a bicycle and be riding alongside a country creek. I can be in wine country. I can be at a farm stand. I can be in the mountains or on the beach. Almost everything in an hour. And it's hard to want to move away
from
that sort of convenience. Also, the food is really quite lovely.
Yeah,
so
I've seen some pictures.
I have a complicated sort of relationship with my journey in technology in that I'm a marketer, and often marketers are, I'm a marketer by trade, and often marketers are sort of like the last folks to be considered in a technology conversation.
Good point.
And there's a lot of skepticism about what a marketer might do. And I think a lot of the perspective and the values that I bring in my work actually have proven some people wrong, and you know, work to get me at a seat at the table at some really interesting conversations. One of the best compliments I've ever had was a designer described me to a colleague as they're a marketer, but they think like a product person.
Ooh, I like that.
And really, like at its core, is like I really care about users and their experience and having an authentic relationship with like the brand. That's the marketer's job, is like to help connect future users or, you know, customers with an idea, with a brand, with a technology. And like you can try to do it if you're dishonest. You can try to do it if you overpromise. But like the long strategic lasting results come from really understanding who you're trying to connect with, who you're trying to support. And really telling stories, you know, showing them why, you know, new technologies and ideas are interesting, you know, bringing them along on this journey that like a lot of product teams have already done. And so, you know, they're a marketer who thinks like a product person means like they do user research. they're honest in their claims about the tools. You know, they care about, you know, things like user experience, like the onboarding, you know, those first moments with a technology, because that is also part of your brand. You know, is your tool, you know, easy to use or is it a pain in the butt, is like part of brands like Salesforce and Canva. And I will let you choose which ones you, you know, you have those characteristics on. So my whole beginning in tech marketing space really started from this passion of like, could we make user experiences better? And my love of XR really, I'm taking you a little bit back, but it gets to this, how I've been using the technology for so long.
Yeah.
Really started because of a co-working agreement. Really? I was at a marketing and strategy agency that had an incubator. It was very Portland, you know, we have some extra space. We'll rent it out for trade, essentially, you know, to different innovative companies. And there was a 360 video production company that was in-house at our agency. Nice. And they had credit with the agency that they really wanted to use, because they wanted use cases, they wanted customer testimonials, and they wanted to be able to like provide value back to the relationship. And because everybody was on customer work, and you know, this is like 2015, so we're talking DK, you know, ones and twos.
Gosh,
era.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about when the first like big excitement about, you know, millions of devices sold. But one of the like asterisks was that most of those millions of VR devices being sold were Google Cardboards. You know, like even the big players that we hear today weren't in the millions of installs.
Yeah.
So it was very early, and convincing any sort of clients to like invest in, you know, content, video, marketing that needed extra apps or viewers or extra was just a no starter. And so our internal marketing team, which I was a part of, was looking, you know, to like work with our scant resources and looking to do things that were interesting and engaged the community. We at that agency produced an event. And so, you know, how do we engage this community that's interested in technology and marketing with real life examples of what's out there? Right. And this sort of starts my journey of show, don't tell. You know, investigating new technologies, bringing them to audiences, helping translate them, bring them in. And the first things that we were doing, you'll laugh because these are some of the main use cases that you still hear today, was was wayfinding. How do I get from the event location to the party location? And it was also event promotion. We were using 360 videos and photographs on Facebook ads, you know, so that people could get a sense of the neighborhood that they were in, get immersed in Portland, feel a connection. Nice. We're still now, you know, using immersive video, you know, like a major use case of the Apple Vision Pro is you can look at spatial photos and videos.
Yeah.
Right. And so there has been a lot of progress in the technology, but also
game changer.
Right. The journey of these ideas, you know, we're still in many cases working with the same bites of ideas. I'm trying to prove them out as the technology inches forward over the years. I think I lost my thread just a little bit, but starting way back then, we had this relationship, right, where we had some resources who could advise us on the technology, help us understand and test. And it really just started this process for me of, you know, let's take an idea, let's unpack it, let's try to model it for the use case that we're having. And let's share it with the world. You know, the first year we did 360 videos. The second year we built an immersive storytelling experience. The agency had gondolas, like ski cabin gondolas as phone rooms. And we made an installation that you could go into a VR experience and get advice from different designers from about the community about creative careers.
Whoa.
But you would be looking out onto scenes of Mount Hood, and you would be in a spatially mapped gondola And these experts would come down and give you advice while you're looking out at this scenic environment.
Whoa.
And through, you know, site time and site specific events, we put over 100 people through that experience.
Wow.
Over the course of like a 2-day event.
Mm-hmm.
And right, like once you get that much hands-on user testing and really start to understand how people engage with technologies, what they're comfortable with or what they're scared with,
mm-hmm.
There's so many curious little ideas to go explore and unpack and improve that have been hooked really ever since. And lucky enough to be, you know, working at different AR companies where we're like making proof of value use cases to pitch all of our clients with rather than telling them about the promise of the tools. Or, you know, working with global brands and, you know, Fortune 100s to help them take technologies to market.
Mm-hmm.
And being a marketer who cares about the product, cares about that storytelling, the connection of the technology to the actual customers, yeah. has given me this ability to have a seat and influence these different products and tools and companies at a level that I would have never dreamed about 10 years ago. But is absolutely my 120% passion these days.
And you're doing it great. And I feel like you always have that customer first mindset whenever you are approaching these projects, which is really important. As we both have seen the metaverse hype cycle a couple of years ago, everyone was super excited about it. Everyone was like, oh, this is cool. There were a few use cases of Roblox and Gucci kind of leaning into that for some of their experiences, which they did a great job. But as the more of the Gartner reports started coming out and AI started superseding that, people thought that just, you know, VR development and AR development just kind of stopped, but it didn't. It's continuing to be augmented by AI. So I'm curious from you, what have you seen recently that has been exciting on your front from Awesome Futures of bringing this type of technology to clients and helping them see more innovative ways to engage with their customers?
Yeah. Man, those are like five really juicy ideas. Because there's the connection between AI and XR, which I think is a really interesting one. There's the guiding customers through choices around innovation.
Mm-hmm.
There's some next areas as well. I think as it comes to like the connection between, so like XR technology, I think, gosh, let me get to this idea is here. So there's a dramatic difference between what a hype cycle is and says about an industry, and what an industry's progress like can tell you about its future. And right, like the hype cycle really measures hype, and it's based in, it's in the terms, but it's really, you know, how much of a share of the conversation are these ideas having. You know, how much of the consumer's imagination are these engaging and inspiring? And the technological impacts, or like the development of the technologies, is always a very different story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that like, you know, to bring it back to this user experience conversation, a lot of the hype that happened in XR recently was in the last year. We started seeing a lot of what were traditionally VR headsets now able to do like mixed reality or pass through augmented reality, because they're putting cameras on the outside of the devices that allowed the user to see the world around them while they're also in a headset. And many people talked about like the fidelity of the cameras and like the excitement of the technology or the feats that it take, you know, that these cameras enabled. But like, for me, the experience that I had that was enabled by those that passed through camera was dramatically different than what I had in the Quest 1 that was just a couple years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I pay attention when I'm, you know, sharing technology with my family, and both my kids and my parents put on the Quest 3 and said, without any prompting, wow, I like this better because I can see what's around me and I feel safe enough to go explore these games and other things. Like I have this, right? I have this feedback that I'm okay, so I can go enjoy this game. So two generations are saying this feedback unprompted. And from my perspective, I was the one who had to set it up. And being able to use QR codes with pass-through, you know, the pass-through was good enough of an innovation that I could read a pin from my mobile phone and enter it on my headset without having to take my headset off. I could get connected to Wi-Fi. I could get connected to payment. I could get connected to Facebook, all while staying in the headset and having a good experience. And for me, the novel innovation of these extra cameras and the pass-through was nothing compared to the dramatic improvement of onboarding experience and the sense of safety and like just control that those technologies enabled. And so oftentimes, you know, the hype cycle is thinking about the specs. They're thinking about the installs, the sales, the macroeconomic stuff. But what's happening to really drive the industry forward is it got a lot safer and faster and more comfortable to even start using the technology. And like, if you're thinking about scale and you're thinking about selling to enterprises, right? Every new technology wants to sell to enterprise. If you're thinking about scale and enterprise adoption, you cannot have a device management protocol that takes hours for each device or has to be done only through a mobile app, right? Like, you have to be able to quickly process things, to do things on the back end, to do it with security protocols. And like the better user experiences, you know, the listening to people and how they're using it is what reduces those barriers almost more than anything else that people like to have.
Yeah. And that right there is what increases consumer adoption, is the reducing the friction of entry. And I'm glad that you identified that, because there's nothing more annoying in this world than having to take off my headset, look at my phone, and keep doing this whole dance of off, on, off, on. And if you just have mixed reality and pass through, you're able to receive all that information very quickly. But it's interesting that they mentioned the safety aspect. And that makes me think that, you know, people are going to have more trust in their physical environment that is familiar to them versus a simulated environment that is like brand new. It's interesting to think that AR could be the one that has that less barrier to entry versus VR. Like, maybe we got it wrong. We just needed to switch it up a little bit.
So you were talking about the metaverse hype cycle and how, like, in 2022, everybody at AWE was, or like 21.
Yeah, 21, like 22.
21, 22. Everybody was talking about what is the metaverse,
what
right?
Is it?
And there were all of these descriptions of the metaverse. It's always on. It's, you know, it's social. It's immersive. It's open, right? I think one of the biggest things that we missed on there, that everybody got wrong, this idea that open, always on, you know, multiverse scaled content is a place that anybody is going to go to by themselves. I don't know why the metaverse needs to be on 24/7, because one of the best things I ever do in the metaverse is when I go there and I connect with people on purpose. Whether it's for gaming with people around the world, whether it's for different symposiums, like with the XR Women, which shout out, because I met you at an XR Women event.
Yes.
Going into virtual spaces for me is almost always about doing it on purpose and doing it with community. And this idea that we would want something that's like always on and always empty, and you know, like the social part, the intentionality part, is something that I think all of those predictions got wrong.
Agreed.
And what augmented reality like keeps front and center, right? You can be social. And like one of the cool things about the new Snap spectacles, the Snap Spectacles 5, right, is multiplayer views of the same augmented reality stuff. So you're not just a single person looking at your own game, but you're two people in the world that you share now collaborating and engaging on a game. And that like shared view of digital assets and collaboration is like the most prominent use case across any VR or AR or MR thing ever. Mm-hmm. And like, it's just starting to become a norm in consumer augmented reality glasses, right? Again, that like development, the technology needs to meet the big ideas. We're still off a little bit, but shared spaces in AR starting to become a really big thing. And right, like, is AR, does it need to be a visual hologram in your world? Or could having like heads up artificial intelligence help you read, plan, and contextualize your day? Like, that's contextual, spatially aware, insights that you're getting real time. It's many of those like metaverse checkboxes, but I think you'd have a hard time convincing, you know, people that the Meta Ray-Bans with AI are actually like an augmented reality experience.
Agreed. Yes, that was very well said on a lot of fronts. So pulling the thread there community-wise, yes, I think that is one of the biggest use cases that people have ignored. I'm surprised there aren't more trade shows or expos happening in VR. I love going to XR Women meetups virtually and being able to connect with other people via our avatars, because one, I don't gotta put on makeup or look cute. I show up in my avatar and it's the most convenient thing, and that allows me to show up and connect authentically and take the social anxiety out of like worrying about what I look like or whatever, and just like having real conversations with people. And that's been so rewarding. So I'm really glad that you feel the same way about those community-based experiences.
Yeah, I did go on a rant there. You've got me excited, Ashley.
No, I love it. I love it. I really, really good things to think about here. And especially one use case I wanted to mention here for the Meta Ray-Bans, and, you know, wayfinding is one of the use cases. I saw a use case for a woman who was blind and was using it for wayfinding and for reading menus at restaurants or recording people who are like nasty and rude to her and like being able to protect yourself. And she was mentioning like multiple use cases in that like less than 1 minute Instagram reel. And I thought, well, you know, this is what happens when we think about building inclusivity. What's something that works for, you know, all? Imagine. We're getting there. Orion, still far away, still super expensive, but I'm glad that we're talking about
it. Go back to the story that you just told. One of the things that I really, really, really liked about Snap's announcement about the glasses was the values that they used to describe it.
Really?
Right? This person, the blind person, well, yes, and I know it's controversial, but we can get it. So the blind person that you're talking about, right, describes the values of this technology very simply, right? They're not talking about how many degrees of freedom these glasses have. They're saying, I can read a menu, right? They're really relatable, like human terms.
It's easy to understand. Right?
And I'm not remembering all three of them, but I specifically took notes when Snap was talking. Right. But when Snap was giving their talk about the spectacles, they talked about it being lightweight.
Okay.
They talked about it being like fast, and they talked about it in these just incredibly human, easy terms. And it was like, oh, right, it's not something that's heavy or bulky, and they are still heavy and bulky. Much love, but they're big. When you're actually trying to reach consumers, when you're trying to get into people's lives, like, people aren't measuring their lives in pixels or refresh rates, right? They're measuring in connection.
What percentage of people are?
Podcasters, maybe? Yeah. I don't know. But it's when you can actually start to get to those real human terms.
Yep.
Like, that's when you're actually talking to people about technology in a way that means anything to them. And I think that's actually a sign of how clear you understand your own value is how little tech talk you need to use to explain the value.
Wow. You're so well articulated, Nathan. I'm going to pull that for a quote there. Thank you. It's what a time to be alive, right?
Right.
What a time to be alive. And, you know, thinking about these experiences, some things that stood out to me when you talked about, you know, AR, I really enjoyed when you created you collaborated with some artists to create some really cool AR filters for AWE. And one of them was kind of like a find your way, which I really enjoyed because it was interactive and fun. But I'm glad that it was a good use case that AR in location-based or event-based experiences for that aren't dead. They're still alive and thriving, and they're accessible, and they're not as expensive as people might think they are. So, like, maybe let's talk through how, you know, technology has increased in over time. So AR experiences are more accessible, they're more affordable, and to the average small, medium-sized business, no longer thinking that you have to invest a small fortune to be able to tap into this market, it's actually pretty a lot lower than most people think. So let's pull on that thread a little bit, since you were an expert in this area.
Yeah. I mean, the one of the my favorite advancements, well, actually, let me start with some data, and that will tell you why I'm so bullish in this area. The last event that I made, social filters, AI cameras, effects for, we had five different applications that we made, and two of them were web-based AI cameras that would take a picture and of you and stylize it in a certain way based off of the system prompts. If you're on like TikTok or Instagram Reels, this is something that you've seen a ton of, but newsflash, most people aren't working on, you know, the effects and AI translations that are going on those social platforms. So we had these web-based AI tools, no login required.
Nice.
Like literally just go to the URL and like get started on the application. You know, got to click some buttons because of data privacy, but like no barriers, no login, no nothing. And then we also had three social like filters and effects on Instagram and Snapchat. And those right there are audiences. Instagram and Snapchat are two of the best places to go see augmented reality filters on a mobile phone. There's really great tools. You know, there's fantastic creators all over the world. When we looked at the data behind usage and activation, right? And like, we noticed some things big time. And I the data is not in front of me, so I might stumble through it a little bit. But we effectively saw close to 100 times more engagement.
Whoa.
And 10 times more sharing and like output of photos captured from the web-based apps.
Whoa.
And when you're in the technology space, the idea of like, oh, Instagram filters are the most accessible place to make an AR filter. Obviously, you'd want to go do that. What we saw in the data was that needing somebody to log into Instagram in order to try the effect was a major barrier for people wanting to try it at all. If they didn't have the social media account, a new technology was not going to be the thing that was going to drive them to make an account, share their data with Facebook. You know, there's a lot of considerations. But what we also heard was from the people who, from the web-based experiences, I heard things like, I shared it with my dad. He's no good at anything tech. And he sent me a picture that he could take. And
what that
showed me was when you make it, people are really interested and curious about these terms and technologies that they're hearing about. But many of them aren't on TikTok like you are, technologist, aren't on Instagram like you are, podcaster, right? And so the overall community still has a much lower understanding of what's out there.
Yeah.
And they're not going to go into a social tool just to discover it. But if you make it really low barrier, if you make it accessible, they are interested to try. And, you know, there has been a big shift in social media use from people like posting photos of themselves constantly, shout out millennials, right? To today's more conservative, like curated, you know, more Pinterest, you know. And people typically don't necessarily want to put selfies of them looking weird out into the world in permanent places. And so what we saw was web-based experiences get way better performance. And one of the biggest trends that I've seen in the last year or so was almost every platform, like number one, Instagram just announced that they're, you know, gated environment for Spark AR, AR web development tools, is going away for individual creators at the end of the year. So that channel doesn't work.
Right? That's kind of wild to think about. The majority of filters on the market right now are all made in Spark Studio. Mm-hmm. And they're going away. Bye-bye. Sad.
But, you know, we saw at AWE, Snap's got some really powerful image tracked, you know, web AR-based tools. Niantic Studio's got a lot of really powerful things that I'm really excited to see and how that, like, plugs into the rest of their mapping and gameplay and scanning tools out there. Yeah. Like, that's a really interesting ecosystem. Snap and Niantic announced at that recent Snap Summit, right, that Scaniverse's optimized Splat technology will be viewable on the Snap lenses.
What? That's a big deal. So, I was playing with Gaussian Splat last Friday. That's a huge deal.
Right? Right. Being able to take these new technologies and actually put them into fairly accessible consumer devices, you know, longwear. Interesting devices. So the move to integrated tools as well as web-based tools is probably like where I am most excited about augmented reality development at the moment.
But I have a question for you on that.
Your question?
As a marketer, so yes, I agree with you. I mean, data shows that you're just going to have less barrier to entry on anything if you don't have to log in or do extra steps. Versus just going to a web browser. And I think that's where we're headed for everything is web browser based. But my curious question is, you know, from a marketer perspective and from a business perspective, if you're requiring people to log in with their Facebook, then you're automatically getting a certain level of demographic information and that's extra data. So for your web, is what kind of data is there aside from just the fact that someone attended? Are you getting the data that you need or is there specific, I don't know what I'm asking here, but how would you justify that to like an executive that's like, oh, we want to get demographic data and what's the downfall of using web browsers to not get as much data as you might get from, say, logging in via social?
Yep. I think how you look at metrics always comes back to what your goals are, right? And the goal that we had for this event was showcase best-in-class examples of what these technologies can do. And so for us, a key, you know, KPI for success is usage.
Yep.
And if we could have 100 times more people in the tool and 10 times more in, you know, like uses of the tool, those were the key, you know, those are the key metrics. And that points to it all the time. Mm-hmm. I think one of the pain points that you're kind of getting around, so I'm going to pivot the question just a little bit, is there is a distinct need for marketers to and brands and executives to think differently about their analytics when they think about spatial experiences, right? And one of the first questions like that I would always ask you, you're saying, well, you get a lot of demographic from, you know, demographic data from the opt-in and the app usage and the logins that we have today. But there's also a lot of complaints out in the world about data scraping, about the ethics of a freemium model, about how it's really led to everybody's information being out in the world, you know, traded publicly. And, you know, as somebody who comes from a user first perspective, like, what does Beat Saber need to know about my gender? For me to have a good experience listening to music and slicing blocks with lightsabers.
Yes, I agree 100%.
Right? So like that's potentially information that's great for Beat Saber to have, but it really doesn't necessarily impact my experience.
Yeah.
But it does put me out there. And so there's one like, what is the ethics of the marketing data that you're collecting? And do you actually need that data to do your job? Mm-hmm. And often the answer is no and no.
Yes.
Right. Because like if you're focused on impression, so the other example, right, and the other direction is like, what are the metrics that are actually moving your business? And there's some really great data out there. I've seen a couple just fantastic presentations through the XR pub crawl, XR AR pub crawl that Lisa Payton produces. And then I've actually joined forces with with Leslie Shannon. Look forward to some of those episodes coming soon. Where we've had experts who are working in tools like Fortnite, who are working in tools like Roadblocks. And right, they're starting to share like the kinds of brand value that you get from a 3D experience, mm-hmm. right? Success on LinkedIn or Twitter or YouTube for a video is measured in 3 seconds of eyeball time.
That's wild.
Right? Like a view on LinkedIn is 3 seconds of eyeball time. And this is like industry accepted standards. So when you're talking about the thousands of views that you have, you're talking about thousands of seconds.
Yeah.
Right? The average dwell time for in-game and like interaction mm-hmm. for in-game assets. So like if you're Starbucks and you put a branded Starbucks cup in a Roblox obby, right? Like mm-hmm. an obstacle course where you have to collect all the Starbucks cups. Those kinds of games typically see 20 to 40 minutes of active gameplay.
Whoa. That's
so
huge.
Do you want like when you so when you're starting to talk about spatial experiences, the kind of engagement, the kind of brand relationships that you're building, like you have to ask yourself, do I want 3 seconds of eyeball time? Or do I want 40 minutes of having fun and building memories with my friends? Right. And like one of those is going to build a connection with a brand. And one of those might have been while somebody was drinking their coffee.
Wow.
Right. Or tabbed away. And
true.
So spatial changes how you think about engagement. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, in the omnichannel world we're in today, one of the things I say over and over and over again is if you think you have one funnel and if you think it has fewer than a few hundred steps, like you're not following how people are using media, right?
No.
Like people are everywhere. People are in their apps for some yeah. things. They're online for other things. Some people don't do either. Some do both. But like the game that you're playing as a marketer now is meet people where they're at, be authentic and relevant to them over hundreds of touch points,
yeah.
not like 4 quick banner clicks. And I think, yeah. right, like when I'm trying to build a relationship over time, I want those 40-minute engagements way more than I want 40 of those 3-second engagements.
It's a much longer lasting impression in the mind too, and brain.
Right? Like just when you think about like, marketing ideas like share of voice. How much of this person's attention did you have today? You know, a 30th. That's great. That's hours in the day, right?
Yeah. Better than nothing.
No.
And I'm so, wow. You're really hitting the nail on the head here. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on just so one, I'm glad that you mentioned data privacy and ethics, but one thing that I think I've been seeing as, you know, let's say make a recommendation to explore AR-based experiences that are web browsers
mm-hmm.
and people are like, oh, well, it's going to be too expensive or, oh, there's the barriers there. So what have you been able to share on that front to help alleviate some concerns with clients that might think that it is a significant cost for development versus the investment of what the outcome will be? How do you toe that line?
Well, I mean, the good news is, right, immersive experiences are starting to become, the same price point as like microsites and small web pages, mm-hmm. right? Instead of multiple years to make something happen, certain kinds of, filters and effects, you can build a TikTok effect with the mobile TikTok app mm-hmm. on your phone in less than 20 minutes. And it is publishable and you can get, certain kinds of data. It's not going to be every single feature, but like, there's absolutely ways that you could start testing and growing and, even just build internal alignment and interest for mm-hmm. almost no cost.
Mm-hmm.
I do think, right, like thinking about goals is always very important. Mm-hmm. And, right, you have to...
Extremely important.
You always want to be using a medium for its strengths. And right, like augmented reality is not a lead generating technology. Like use your ebook, use your subscription form, right? Like there mm-hmm. are certain things that work great on web and just do it that way. But if you're trying to break the mold, if you're trying to stand out, if you're trying to compete with KFC Portugal's like over the top hyper, you know, advertising, like you're going to need to step up. And mm-hmm. I think companies that are trying to do something bold don't mind spending money mm-hmm. on a bet, but they want to make sure that they can look good doing it. Mm-hmm. And they want to make sure that they can feel proud about what they're putting out there, right? And so that usually means aligning it to core business goals and downscoping expectations about what amount of technology is needed to be really impactful. And one of the places that I advise over and over and over again is like, is this the right bite of augmented reality? Like, is this getting you all of your goals and nothing more, right? Like that MVP or most lovable product, you know, that Avi Barzev has talked about. Find the thing, the experience that gets people to go, oh, wow, that's great. Mm-hmm. And like, that's good enough. Just stop there. Right? Like,
oh my gosh. I love that.
And
I'm gonna
you can
that
save a
you.
Lot of budget. Right? Like, you can save a lot of budget.
Technology.
If you're... Yeah.
What a great term. Overscoping.
There's this.
It happens all the time.
And there's this assumption that it has to be like perfect and seamless and full 3D and high realism for anybody to be interested in it. Mm-hmm. But it usually just has to be better than something that already exists.
Exactly. And I think that at the end of the day, it's about getting people to state clear goals. Like how do we measure success? What do we consider success? If success is we developed a cool, innovative experience and people are visiting it, then yes, success has happened. You know, and I think, you know, it requires people to think a little bit deeper, and sometimes they don't want to or don't have the time to, and that can lead them away from the actual whole point of what they're doing.
Yeah, the misalignment on the why is most often why people get frustrated.
I mean, yeah, that's a good motto in life. just to put it there. But so can you tell us a little bit more about Awesome Futures so that people know a little bit more about it, know where they can find you and can follow and subscribe and all that good stuff?
Absolutely. Awesomefuture.studio is the website where you can see everything Awesome Future. I produce a couple of different podcasts that we have hosted and listed there, both the AR Minute as well as the Glow Up, Fabulous Conversations with Innovative Minds, where we talk with people about the journey of innovation and how you stay with big ideas until they're ready. So lots of great conversations with both seasoned innovators and new founders there, talking about the hard choices and customer insights that drive that journey. You can find us on all of the social medias, either at Awesome Future, and I'm Mix Nathan C. most places. Goodness.
I will link all of that in the show notes so people have that.
We can
I
put all the...
I just wanted to make sure to cover it. That way people know where to find you and cover all these cool projects that you're working on. But I'm curious, what is something that you're looking forward to that excites you? That is pulling together all of your favorite things.
I mean, that is Awesome Future. I have this really broad background, you know, with art and television production and marketing, and Awesome Future lets me use all of those skills on a daily basis to help people, you know, see their ideas in new ways and figure out how to focus and, you know, bring them to success faster. I'm actually really geeky about health technology.
Really?
People know me for augmented and virtual reality, but the health tech space is actually a place that I'm really interested in. And by comparison, right, we keep talking about when augmented and virtual reality industries will be a multi-trillion dollar industry. Mm-hmm. That is healthcare now in the U.S. In fact, it's a third of our GDP. And so while my heart and origins, you know, in tech are really with the immersive space, there's a lot of founders and a lot of great ideas and a lot of impact to be made in the healthcare technology space. Mm-hmm. And I'm taking my podcast to this event called Health at the end of October.
Oh,
and
fun.
My primary goal is to make talking about health technology fun.
Oh, I love that.
Because
simple goal.
There's so many Oxford shirts talking about their APIs, and I just, that's not me. And
no more API conversations.
Oh, we're going to get further than the APIs and the dot releases. Yeah, we're going to get into the
that's
values
cool.
about
why
people
That sounds
fun.
That sounds like something I would want to listen to.
Well, there will be Glow Up episodes from Health coming in November.
I can't wait. I cannot wait to hear more about that. I'm probably not as on your level of excited about health tech, but I love my Apple Watch. I'm fascinated with the Aura rings and how they're able to fit all that technology in the tiny ring. You know, what is helping people either live healthier, longer lives or save themselves from a potentially dangerous accident? But, you know, the use cases are really endless for that, which is exciting. I'm using an app right now that I really like. Because shout out to developers and making sure that there's equity there. But there's two women from Harvard that built an app called Stardust. And they saw that most of the health apps made for women were built by men. And therefore, that data is owned by men as well. So they decided to start their own app called Stardust. And it helps you track your cycles, your hormonal cycles. And you can add a partner as well. So you can stay in communication. It's just another way that I think technology is able to augment our life experience in a very like low-key way. But also mm-hmm. thinking through like the ethics and privacy and moral of how you're sharing your data. I think it's important to remember as we as consumers have power and we show our power in what we buy, what we subscribe, what we post, what we enact with. And you can change what you're enacting with if you want to do that. You have the power to do it. I think it deserves mm-hmm. a reminder, especially at this time of year.
Yeah, and honestly, like, support women-founded businesses.
Totally.
Something like 97% of all VC funding goes to men.
Yeah.
Businesses that are run by men. So, like, anytime.
And even the numbers are even worse for, like, multiply marginalized populations as well, as we know. So definitely support multiply marginalized populations and business owners out there that are putting their heart and soul into their business. And we are business owners ourselves. So thank you for listening, if you're listening to this. But Nathan, in terms of, okay, so it's October right now. It's 2024.
Yep.
What is your prediction for 2025? What do you think is going to be the next greatest thing in your mind that excites you?
Well, I'm waiting for the day that everyone in the world around me is wearing augmented reality glasses.
Okay.
So they can see all the digital fashions that I want to wear.
Yeah. I like it.
That's,
I like it.
That's one. My prediction, it's actually more of a should than a prediction.
Okay.
But AI avatar solutions that can learn everything that you know and speak intelligently like you about your business are as low as $50 a month out there with certain web subscriptions. And I believe it's probably one of the smartest uses of money. Like, I think anybody with a brand that has any explaining, any details, any perspective that you want to get out into the world, like putting a video AI agent on your website that can represent you rather than just a contact us form, will transform how most people engage with websites probably in the next 6 months here.
Wow. When you say AI agent, are you thinking like, I'm thinking if I paid someone to like recreate me and I'm on my website and if someone wants to know like what the heck is Software Scout? And they can click on it and there's a video that's like, okay, this is what Software Scout is. This is who it benefits. This is what we do. That's great. People engage more with video than text.
Except, it is a live generated video avatar. So it's 2D. Shows up like a video window on your website.
Wow.
But you can hold a verbal conversation with it.
Amazing.
Asking exactly like, tell me about Ashley Coffee Services. Tell me about Coffee and Consult. How many times have you spoken on a TED stage? What were the highlights from your last three talks?
Wow.
The amount, you'd basically just train this AI agent on your talks and your blog posts and your social feeds.
That's
it
so
learns
cool.
to talk about your work and like you. You give it a little bit of video footage, and it's a little funny because sometimes the AI is good at directing your conversational face, but like it can't like get overly surprised, or it can't like do certain gestures on command. But for having an informational conversation, you can talk with the CEO of a company and never use a minute of their time.
That's huge. Wow. In a world where we can replicate ourselves, the answer is yes. Whatever saves us time.
Give yourself that time back.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, we're putting so much time into so many things, and anything you can do to save time. And I like to focus on marginal increases of improvement. And those marginal increases add up over time. This right here is one of those.
Literally, as cheap as $50 a month that you can put an agent on your website.
That's huge. And I've been experimenting with being able to create AI bots, whether it's through Zapier. Like, there's a chatbot beta right now in Zapier where you can kind of create your own chatbot and integrate it onto your website. I'm experimenting with that. And of course, Meta's AI creators did the same thing. They created a Tech Tips Trixie. Paying homage to Trixie Mattel. Yes. And so Tech Tips Trixie will answer your tech questions if you're afraid to ask a question because you think it's a dumb question or you don't know how to protect yourself from a potential scam. You can ask Tech Tips Trixie and she'll be there for you. But it's just little things that I'm interested in hearing. Are people finding use out of? Is it beneficial? It's not just a toy. It's a tool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, what have been some standouts that you've interacted with recently that have really stood out to you as being a great use case of interacting with an AI touchpoint with a brand that's not been a client of yours?
Yeah. The Wall, W-O-L experience that Niantic brought to AWE a couple of years ago was developed in partnership with a studio and I think potentially in-world AI was... It was a web XR based experience as well as for the Vision Pro I think it was Quest Pro at the time. An owl avatar came out and talked to you about a portal scene of the Redwood Forests.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so interested in having a conversation with you that you, even if you ignored it, it was a fun, focused, like targeted experience. And if you had any direction that you wanted to push the conversation, it would follow. So it wasn't like limited. It was like very expansive and engaging. That still is a standout for me. I also, just like you mentioned, visited a signage company, like a print signage company that had a ChatGPT chatbot on its website. I had a very nuanced question about like, what's the right size font to use for an accessibly legible sign at a certain distance? Very detailed information. It was never going to turn into business for this company, but the AI chatbot gave me exactly what I needed. And I was so thankful. It was like the best customer experience I ever had. And I didn't take up anybody's business day. And I think when you're thinking about like, how do you improve things like give better customer service without like sending five more emails, like that level, but give people the information that they want and make every web touch point like positive, making web touch points that are positive at all would be a great goal for the internet. And making it happen on a recurring basis will do great things for your brand.
Yes. And I think the key right there, and I want to hone in on it, is meet people where they are. I think that right there is key. I think so many people, and particularly marketers, want to bring things to their customers and do it 100%. You got to meet people where they are and make it actually work. So I appreciate that perspective.
Yeah, I'm gonna just always.
I don't remember that. I was there 2 years ago, but I don't know if I did that one. I did check out the one that they did last year. They were setting up the night before or the day before AWE, and I didn't realize that their stuff was off limits to touch. And Tara and I were experimenting, and they were like, please don't touch this. Please go away. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I was just playing. But it's been really cool to see kind of over the years. I love DressX, how they've been really innovative with their virtual outfit, seeing that as a great use case at AWE. We all know, like, Kathy Hackle, the godmother of the universe, is essentially, like, the touch point for fashion in the metaverse. Yes. And I'm surprised we haven't seen more companies start to adopt virtual try-on rooms to see what their, you know, clothing looks like on them or their body type. But we're just not there yet. So I'm curious, in terms of fashion and being able to see your beautiful closet of virtual fashion wear, how far off do you think that is?
I think, a lot of digital creators are ready for it. There's some companies like FaceMe that are doing really cool stuff with like large scale mirrors. They're more for like brand effects than like specific like try on per se. And some of that has to do with like every different fashion company designs and develops their products differently. Mm-hmm. And like, will all of them have 3D models of every single garment that they make that also has like rigging and physics and all of these things that make that virtual try-on feel really aesthetic? Or is it like, but like FaceMe is using, doing activations with like Maybelline to put people on, using AI or AR cameras on the street level to put them on gigantic, billboards in community squares. And so, I do think this idea of like, you see a lot of snap mirrors and these like virtual mirrors are one of those AR technologies that I think are becoming pretty commonplace. You're starting to see them installed in store and like other permanent locations. Mm-hmm. I think, being able to like create kiosks that can display multiple, digital storefronts or multiple, could you go to one mall through one digital kiosk? There could be some interesting things there. I do also think, there's not like a centralized output yet for like, how do these things all come together best? Is it a snap mirror? Is it a custom lens? I think there's some like platform hardware things that like would need to be a little bit easier before brands would start to take that kind of stuff in-house. But, fashion is like never an industry that you have to convince to do interesting things.
That's true.
Like, there was like a fashion show just last week that involved like thousands of pounds of denim waste.
I saw that.
Filling a warehouse and tons of denim waste. And like, fashion will spend money to do interesting things. That's like kind of what that industry does.
For real. Absolutely. It's been nice to see, of course, the at-home try-ons with the glasses. But the Maybelline used to have a partnership with Zoom, I think, where they had some Maybelline filters, but they pulled those. I don't know why, but I really liked them because it was great where I didn't have to put on makeup to get on Zoom. But
every streaming content has a contract and an end, right?
That's true. Not all good things must come to an end, which is why I think it'd be nice in the future for us to have our own little AR profiles, like, this is my Zoom profile, so I a little freshened up. This is my go into this virtual and my spatial profile. But on the spatial front, I have the new iPhone, and it lets you take spatial photos now too, which is really exciting. And I've been playing around with Gaussian Splat within Scanoverse and looking to see how it handles glass and transparency. And I know it handles it really well, but still experimenting with it there. But I think there's high promise with where that's going. And I've seen some companies, there's a company here in Oklahoma that actually targeted a custom clothier. So this custom clothier makes like custom suits for men and women. And they approached them to say, hey, have you considered having like a 3D model like showroom where people can, instead of bringing these big binders to a meeting and say, let's pick out your material and color, let's do that, but virtually, so they can create a 3D model. It's essentially a mesh that's the same, pants, top, whatever, and you're changing the buttons and all of the other attributes there. But it just makes it a little bit easier for people to visualize what it is that they're going to see before they actually get in the store. And yes, you can still feel it if you want to, but it's another touch point.
Actually, I have 2 minutes till my next.
I love that. Let's land this plane. Okay. Always like to ask a question before I say goodbye to my guests here. But if you were stranded in Antarctica and you can only bring one piece of technology with you, only one, what would that piece of technology be?
Oh, goodness. It would probably be a digital music player. You said I'm stranded, so I can't bring like a portal gun with me. Music is how I focus and regulate and decompress. And so I would say I'd have to bring music with
me. Man, what a good note to end on. Music is the universal truth for us all.
One of the better technologies.
True, true. Well, Nathan, this has been amazing. Thank you for your time and thank you for sharing your expertise with the audience. I'm really excited for this episode to go live. I'll be sure to link all of your contact information, where to follow you, all in the show notes. And I'll be also linking the Meet Wall website as well in there. But have a great rest of your day, Nathan. Thank you again. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Always great to chat. Ashley, so good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Coffee and Code. Your support means everything, so be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more insights, updates, and behind-the-scenes content. Stay curious, stay informed. Until next time, stay hydrated, and do something nice for someone.